Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 17 on its way. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, The Plant, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
Hey, and we are here to bring you episode number 17, entitled, A Jedi Craves Not These Things. We're going to be talking about contentment in gaming, as well as what we love about Eurogames. So those are two of the things we're going to discuss with you today, as well as reviews of various other games and things, and whatnot. So Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. You can check us out on the web, www.timemachineportal.com, or check out our Facebook page, The Portal. And you can find all sorts of information about what's going on, hours of operation, events that we have, and stop in. So that should be good. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Frisbee season has started.
Yeah, it's still a little cold out, but
yeah.
It's nice. Good. Yeah.
I hope to get myself out there this year, so yeah. We'll see how that goes. Brian is a much more hardcore Ultimate Frisbee player than I am. I used to be, but now I'm a little slow, and it's tough, so... Nice. All right, let's give you guys some updates here. So first off, we have been running this contest, and we're going to finish it up here. It's going to finish up on April 6th. But if you haven't entered yet, please send us an entry. You can do that by sending us an email to portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, and you can win a $25 gift card to the Portal. So please do. We have some upcoming events, and people I know will be traveling and whatnot, so... stop in the area and you can get that gift card and pick up something nice for yourself or for somebody else on that. So what we need you to do is send that email to us and tell us a topic you would like to hear on the podcast, and we will discuss that with us. So there you go. There's your way to enter the contest. Should be a good one. We got some upcoming events. We've actually been talking about them a bunch here because they're two pretty big ones, I think. And so I will send Brian off on the first one here.
Yeah, so it's kind of similar to the last podcast. So we've got the Silk City Board Game Group coming up Saturday, April 23rd, from 12 to 4:30, and that's going to be at the Manchester Public Library. And as we've kind of talked about in the past, like it's a really good event. We've got some games that we're going to be demoing. Hopefully, you know, some of the new releases, and I don't remember exactly what's on our list of games, but we will be doing a good selection, you know, so we can teach some stuff. And we'll just be running games throughout the whole, you know, the 4.5 hours that we've got going on there. And then we also have, you know, there's a good game library there. So if you're looking just to kind of, you know, try out some new things or whatnot, feel free to stop by and check it out. It's run really well and it's still building up some momentum. So, yeah, that's Saturday, April 23rd from noon to 4:30.
Why don't you throw the other one at us too?
Yeah, and then... you know, following up the week after that, we're going to be running International Tabletop Day at the Portal. So that's going to be from midnight to midnight, like all Saturday, April 30th. We're going to be having games and just, you know, a couple events and whatnot. We just got some more information as far as like some promotional kits where there are going to be some, you know, things that we're going to be giving away throughout the day. And it's just a really good time. Like, you know, there are a couple groups that have been really consistent and they've been coming out. I believe we're going to be having some donations for like coffee and that sort of stuff for the day. So we'll, you know, and Harrison hopefully will be around for that. And he's, you know, he let me know that he's going to be helping provide some of that stuff. So, yeah, Saturday, April 30th, you know, all day we're going to be running games and we hope to see you there.
Nice, yeah. I'm actually looking for some help here because I'm completing my challenge, my 10x10, but part of mine is these longer games, these 3-plus-hour games. So if anybody out there is interested in playing some older, longer games, I have Axis and Allies, Rune Wars, Titan, World of Warcraft board game, Through the Ages, that's new,
yeah,
old new. But if you're interested in playing any of those games, I'm going to be there about 2 a.m., and if you're looking for something like that in that 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. time slot, definitely let me know. And I'm looking to try one of those in that the wee hours there. So
you're hoping to maybe get like two, maybe three games in the course of the game, or the course of the day.
Well, the wee hours there, and then I think as we get to the late hours, we were talking about, like, dexterity games, like Pitch Car, Flick 'em Up,
yeah.
Catacombs, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute, and stuff like that. So anyway, that's just kind of my call out to the people. All right, let's talk about what's on your table. I'm going to kick it off here. So I run a game group at the high school. Where I'm at, it's actually high schoolers and middle schoolers, and we've been playing a lot of Treasure Hunter. This is a Richard Garfield game from Queen Games, and the kids really like it. It's pretty fun. It's a basic drafting game. Everybody gets 9 cards. You pick a card, you pass. You pick a card, you pass. Then round 2, you pass the other way. So you pass left, then right. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 rounds, left, right, left, right, left. And then once you get all your cards, each round, you're just playing them. So you have blue cards, and whoever has the most gets a token. Whoever has the least points in blue gets a token. And then you've got some afterward modifiers that you can play. And it goes through blue, green, and red. But the trick is sometimes having the highest gives you the biggest loss in points. You get treasures that are really crummy. You know, the old shoe, the broken sword. And then sometimes the low is the really good ones. The shiny medallion, the giant ruby. And that kind of thing. Then afterward, everybody has to play guard dogs because the goblins will come and attack your money. So you have to play your guard dogs, fight off the goblins, and then whoever has the most guard dogs will kind of collect some tokens and any money that people paid. And then finally, you can just straight up earn money. So you play the 5 rounds, whoever has the most points at the end wins. And there's a couple other cards in there, but they've really been enjoying it. I think it's a good game for that perfect kind of entry level. It's a great way to get to drafting. It's easier than Seven Wonders. So even that I consider pretty easy from a gamer perspective, but from just kind of a gateway casual gamer, this one works pretty well. I have fun with it. I can min-max a little, a little bit better than other people and kind of remember the cards are in the hand. So it has that element for strategy, but I definitely think it's one of those games where you get to the end, you go, oh, that person won, but remember that turn when I had 7 guard dogs and I played this token? Like, so you can kind of, you have those memorable turns, which is really what you're going for, as well as, from my perspective, teaching them drafting. We've also played Sushi Go, which is even more basic than this, and they've enjoyed that, so they've kind of gotten those two intros. But it makes me wonder if I could then try a Seven Wonders where they know the drafting and go from there, so... For casual gateway, I think Treasure Hunter's a thumbs up. If you've got your night with all your heavy Euro gamers, I wouldn't bring it out.
I mean, as a filler, it's not. Like, it was fun enough for what it was. Yeah. It's not the deepest. You know, if you need a break from one of those heavy Euros, like, you could play this, and I would, you know, I'd be totally fine with that. So.
And it's a solid production.
Yeah.
Queen Game, solid production. Good thick cardboard tiles, the cards. Little gonna get a little worn over time, but you're talking about playing with teenagers and throwing stuff around and good pieces though. So great artwork too.
Yeah. All right. So the first one I was gonna bring up again, which, you know, it's been a little while since I talked about this game, but I wanted to kind of, you know, throw it in here, kind of mention that I've been playing it a little bit more. So Elysium, which is by Space Cowboys and Asmodee, has been getting to the table a couple times recently, and this is like a, you know, a Greek god sort of set collection card drafting style game where you're trying to, like, you know, gather all these gods and they have different powers, and then you're trying to determine when you want to, like, you know, move them into your scoring section. So it's really kind of this, like, balancing act for, like, do I want the powers, like the cool unique powers that are going on, or do I want to actually move this in and score this for the end of the game? And I don't know, I it's been a few episodes. It was one of the first ones, I think, that we brought up, but Elysium has just been, like, you know, getting back to the table after, like, a pretty big delay, and I just wanted to say, like, it's, you know, it's well worth that retread, and, you know, I'm glad I'm getting it back out. I guess, besides, like, we had played it at ConCon.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, this is coming back to me, and, you know, I did have it on my 10x10, which kind of helped a little bit, but I can see this getting a few more plays. The one caveat, like, I think we're going to be playing without Poseidon, you know, because that's a very, like, strong, like, attacking sort of thing, and there's absolutely nothing else in the game that feels that way, at least from, like, my perspective. So it's really, like, a huge swing. Like, and I could see it working for some groups, but it just has never really felt like it's meshed with everything else. And even with my wife, like, it was just like, ah, we don't really want to be doing this because it's so, like, against everything else. So that's the one caveat. Like, I'm probably going to be trying to mix up the, like, other seven gods and, you know, pick five of those rather than going for the full eight.
Well, and it's the beauty of the game is that there's eight, and if you don't like one, you can play without
yeah.
it. I have to agree with you. I'm not a huge take that, but I'm not a huge anti-take that. Mm-hmm. But the problem with these cards is some of them are so unbalanced. It's
yeah.
not even just the oh, this is take that, and that's annoying. It's just so powerful. Like, oh,
right.
you could just pick a card
yeah.
and eliminate somebody's strategy.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and you could just wait to see what their strategy is, and then in a timely manner eliminate. That's just...
Yeah.
It's a little too much, you know? It's just, I don't know, it's no fun. It's almost like, even if you don't want to do the take that, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a Care Bear Rado type, you're going to take it defensively.
Right. And then you might as well use it.
Regardless of what your strategy is,
yeah.
just to get it off the table.
And then it would be foolish not to use it. Like, you
right,
have to
sure.
if you take it. You know, because the first round there was, like, one card that had a very strong... Like, it was basically a one-time ability to make the other person discard, you know, one card from their tableau. And taking that first, it's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm going to take this. And now it's your turn. If you pick a good card, you're just going to get rid of it. And then you're going to start from scratch. So it's like, you don't really have a whole lot of thought going into that. And it's like... It was just a weird feeling for that first game back to the table. So
yeah, and then any format where you could reuse this card, or
yeah,
like
that was available too. So it was like
yeah,
I basically,
much, but
yeah.
but we shouldn't harp on the negative aspect that you can just remove from the game easily. So
right,
it's a great game and lots of ways to change it up. And I even had fun. You know, I was like, oh, I missed that rule, or I'm catching back up
yeah.
to this. And you're like, oh, do you want to take that back? I'm like, nah, let's just keep going. It was fun
yeah.
to just get back into the mechanics of the game. Mm-hmm. Seeing the cards, thinking out the strategy, and I think you beat me pretty decently. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But it was just fun to get back into it. Again, at the end of the day, I wasn't like, oh, you know, I knew where my
right.
mistakes were X, Y, and Z, and we could pick up and go again if we
yeah.
wanted to. We didn't because we were at Con trying to play other stuff. But
yeah.
it was a great – I was so glad we pulled it out and played it 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a lot faster,
yeah.
too. Like, once you kind of – because we had to kind of do a quick refresher. It's not like it's heavy with the rules, but it's like – oh, this is coming back, but
right.
it takes that like processing of the rule book to really get it back to a good flow.
Yeah.
So.
No, definitely a cool game. Elysium. Nice. All right, next up for me is Catacombs. This is by Elzra Games. This is second edition? Third edition? A new edition that I played. I believe it was kickstarted. Catacombs is a dungeon crawl game. One versus many, so you've got one person playing the bad guy, and there's a whole series of bad guys. There's a fire dragon, and a witch, and a zombie necromancer guy,
yeah.
whatever, and all the standard archetypes. And then there's kind of your standard heroes, barbarian, and warrior, and elf, bowman, whatever, all these kind of things. And so people take a character each, or two characters. We were playing three-player, and then I was the bad character. I am of all the bad ones. So, but the twist on this game is it's a dexterity dungeon crawl. So in order to attack, you actually flick your character's disc at the other characters. And if I hit your character when I flick it, I deal a damage. And so the bad guys start really simply. They have one health, they get hit, they're out. They have some minor defenses like, oh, they're immune to melee damage, so you have to shoot them with ranged or something, or little pieces there. And so the first room is usually pretty easy for the good guys to win. Then what you do is you take the board and you actually flip it over, and you've got a new one with new, you put little, they were smart about this, you put round discs in the board. And they're like blockers. Automatic pillars that are in the way and things. So you don't just have a straight shot at everything. So there's some angled shots and whatnot that you have to do. You can bounce things off. If your piece goes off the board, there's a giant like wall that you build around it. It's not really that giant, but a wall you built around the space so things don't go flicking and flying too far. You put stuff back on the board where it comes off, and you go through here. What makes this game so good is... Honestly, this sounds funny, but all the characters are so thematic. so thematic, maybe over the top, but they really did a good job of saying, well, what should a priestess be like? What should a barbarian be like? So the barbarian has a battle axe, and twice per game, he can attack four times in a row. But he has to hit different characters all melee. So you just get in there and start swinging the axe and hit four different people. But you can only use that a little bit. And the elf bowman, she can shoot from range. So when you shoot from range, you get a little tiny arrow disc, much smaller than the others, and you can flick that from 1 inch away from your character. So you kind of get an aim shot. It's a little bit harder to hit, but your character doesn't move. Because your standard melee attack is to flick and move. So it's kind of running in and swinging. And then you put yourself in a position where you can be hit. And the heroes, they slowly get whittled down. So that's the idea for the dungeon lord or whatever, is to just slowly take those hit points away. So after the first room, up, they're all from 10 health to 9 health. I didn't get very far. But then the next room, maybe I get them down to 7 health each, or one character I kind of team up on. The third room is a room where they can just buy items. So they get an item deck, and when they defeat creatures, they get gold, they buy. And then the sixth room is a healer who will heal them back up. They do one more room with a bunch of creatures, and then finally they get to the boss. And the boss has like four powers, can summon new characters, so the board just gets really crazy. But the bad guys have things like poison. So if you get poisoned, you have to draw a card from a poison deck. It doesn't deal any damage, but it kind of has a damage total. And if you ever get so much poison, it passes your original health threshold, you just die outright. So there's some ways to cure that, some spells, there's a wizard, there's another lady that can heal. You can buy healing from poison. You got stun, where you hit somebody, you flip them over, they lose their next shot. The bad guys have like multiple hit points sometimes, so like they'll have two or three. Or you may get a boss, like a mini boss, that has like four or five health. Tons of discs. Tons of different sizes. There's large, yeah. There's medium, yeah. There's small, there's extra small, extra large. Good chunky bits. They're not quite as good in my book as Flick 'em Up, but you're not really going for the same shot. Like Flick 'em Up, you need kind of that perfect shot and that perfect hit, which is really sweet in that game. But in this one, it's kind of, oh, I missed by an inch. That's okay. I'll take my shot next time and keep going. That's part of it. We were just having a rip-roaring time. We were playing below my bedroom, and my wife was sleeping upstairs, and we were keeping her up. We were laughing so hard. If you hit multiple people in one shot, you deal a damage. You can't damage your own character. So if I hit a fellow character, I'm okay. But we, you know, okay, I'm going to flick this so hard. How do we know? So Larry actually took out his cell phone and put it in slow-mo mode, and we recorded the shot. And we go back and we watch it in slow-mo to see, okay, what exactly happened? Because it was so fast, it was hard to tell. And that was just cracking us up. It was also getting close to midnight.
But the one that I saw a video, and it was like, it clearly did not hit two things.
I know, afterward, we thought it did, and afterward it looked like it didn't. I didn't go back to press the issue. At the time, it looked like it did, but I think we were laughing so hard and having such a good time. It's a really fun game. I played it again with the game group at school, and they had a good time too. So,
and it's like one person running the dungeon, and then everyone else is kind of going through.
Yeah, and we took about 2 hours with it because they were really taking their time aiming shots. When I played with the kids, it was much more like 45 minutes. They're just shoot. Mm-hmm. But you know, it came down pretty close. I think they beat me, and I just needed like a hit or two, and I had one health left, and they got my final boss. So you know, it was close, but I definitely think you got to keep it moving. Like, it's one of those games like okay, you know what I mean? But it's fun to aim certain shots if you know they're going to do well. And there's just all sorts of stuff that can happen. There's tons of, I mean, there's got to be 150 discs in there that you can use. So it's just fun, like, oh, next room, what characters? Oh, now it's gargoyles and bats and zombies, and the next room is skeletal archers and behemoths, and like, there's just all sorts of different stuff, and they all have different abilities that are simple yet thematic, and it's really cool to see. That must have been fun for them to design, like, how do we put this element of this character into, you know, into that. So it was neat. I think the minotaur, like, if you shoot stuff at him, he shoots the arrows back at you and you take the damage instead. He like reflects it like the minotaur would in the Greek things there. So that's Catacombs, Elzra Games. Really good, really liked it a lot. So check that one out.
All right, and I didn't get a whole lot of stuff to the table this past week. My wife actually had you know, a play that was she was helping out, like helping put up and whatnot. So the other one was kind of just a quick filler sort of game that I got to the table, and that's Article 27, the UN Security Council game, which is kind of a mouthful, but but that's from Stronghold Games. And this is a, you know, it was a pretty quick, like, filler-style negotiation game where it's kind of going around, like, one person is kind of, like, each person kind of has a turn during the course of the game, and they're putting up, like, all these different agendas that they're trying to get passed in, like, you know, this council, which is basically everyone's voting on if this passes. So there are a couple different, like, you know, five different things that are represented by different colors, so it's like, you know, they're adding them whatever they want to this, like, central thing that everyone can vote on. So, you know, you could add, you know, one to five of the colors, and everyone else is kind of talking as the course of the, like, over a course of one player's turn, and it's like, oh, I want to add, I called them by their colors. I couldn't really get into the theme. So I was like, I want to add green yellow. And yellow, and, you know, like, these diplomatic, yeah, I don't know, like, all these different things. So it's like they're adding this, and then, you know, once they determine, like, this is what we're putting to the table, this is what we want passed, everyone kind of has a secret bid or a secret contribution, like either, you know, pass, fail, or abstain or something like that. So as long as the majority says pass with no person saying fail outright, it'll go through, and, you know, you get points based on what your, you know, what your own personal board has, which is kind of hidden from everyone else. So you're kind of trying to, like, you know, get the maximum amount of points each round and whatnot. And I don't know, it's a very quick-paced negotiation style game, and I did not think it was going to be my type of my cup of tea going into it. And it was actually, you know, it was pretty quick, it was pretty fast. It was a good filler style game. I think the box might have said like 15 or 25 minutes a player or something like that. Like, it doesn't take long, but you can go up to, like, I think it was like six people or something. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, it does have a little bit of depth, like a little more than I thought there was going to be in Article 27. So I don't know. I'm giving this a positive review. It was fun for what it was. I don't know how many, like, you know, how its legs would be. Like, if it might run its course over a few games, but, you know, it was fun for for the initial play that we did, and I think I'd be willing to, you know, play it again, which is totally not something I thought going into it. So,
is it like boisterous and exciting and like screaming and yelling at each other, or is it kind of?
It could be.
Is it strategic?
What do you mean? Like,
slightly, like trying to manipulate your way in there?
Yeah. So, like, so you can kind of bribe people to, like, okay, I'm going to give you money if you let this pass. Like,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm putting this on your board, and, like, if you put the pass through, like, you're getting my money because I wanted you to bribe you and whatnot.
So more of a Sheriff of Nottingham feel?
I guess I haven't played Sheriff yet because I didn't think that was going to be my type of game either.
You never know now.
Right, but this one was good. It was good. It was fun. It wasn't like, I think it wasn't putting one person in the spotlight of, like, you know, like a lot of the times those, like, that style of game, or, like, I guess I'm looking at, like, more social deduction style games where it's, like, very much like there's a lot of pressure on one person at certain points of the game. And this one didn't feel that way, so it felt very, like, laid back. And, you know, maybe it was just, like, going into it with the right frame of mind or something like that, but I enjoyed it, and I would gladly play this again now that I've, you know, gotten that first play, that first one that I was hesitant to get to the table, so.
Nice.
Article 27, Stronghold Games.
Cool, that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, we'll move on to our discussion topic today, A Jedi Craves Not These Things. We're talking about contentment in gaming and board gaming and miniatures gaming and card gaming and all those kind of things. So I don't think we want to beat a dead horse too much here in terms of what we're talking about, but just that idea of, like, where's that contentment level? Like, we're definitely cold to the new. We're playing new stuff all the time. Benefits that there's a store there with demos coming in and new stuff and seeing things come on the shelf.
Though, to be fair, we were kind of starting a little bit from square one. I, like, at least me personally, like, sure. It wasn't like I'd been playing stuff for a long time. So now that we've kind of gotten through a decent amount of time, we have gotten back to those, like, we've been doing, like, the 10 by 10 lists, or we're trying to get those older ones to the table.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, definitely, we do play a lot of new games, and a lot of that is, you know, because of you, Brant, because you're definitely the good, like, the rules guy, and you're pushing to get stuff to the table, which is awesome, so.
Yeah, I think though, you almost took the words out of my mouth, is these 10 by 10 challenges have been really good this year. Like, typically, we'll get together, and on a game night, we'll play one thing new, because people are excited about that. Or I think, a little bit, I'm nervous, because it's almost my own discernment. Like, what do I think we'll like, and what do I think we won't like?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys will be like, oh, yeah, we really want to try that. And I'm like, well, you know what? It looks like something we're not really going to like. Which it might be I'm just not going to like it, and you guys could love it. But I'm trying to not just throw everything at us all the time, you know? And other people are picking up games, too. But really, then we stick. We try to say, okay, what can we knock off of somebody's 10x10 list and replay? And you know, where's maybe the last year before that, or even, excuse me, especially prior to that, we would say, oh, I'd play that again. It would just never come out again. And now we're like, okay, we're dedicated to trying to help people. You know, whether we all make it or not, the goal was still there, which is me. I'm more of a, hey, let's set a goal and just go for it, rather than like, we must attain the goal for success. I think some of the others are more driven by that. But I'm like, hey, at least that goal's there, so it gives us something to stay with. So I think that's good. I think that's given us a chance to kind of revisit games, not let games sit on the shelf. Even sometimes you just have to kind of just take a home, you know, hey, I want to play with these people, and that's their favorite game. That's what they really want to play, or they're excited to play it tonight. So let's go for it, you know? Let's play with them, and I want to see their joy and get to experience that. Did this with you guys with Kanban. You know, it was like, all right, they're excited to get Kanban to the table again. They got it. I promised I would play. It's not one that I'm going to go, hey, let's pull it out again, but I would play it again. You guys really like it, and so, you know, it works there. So I think finding your spot, what are the games you like, and and thinking about that and getting that chance – you don't need to play everything. Mm-hmm. You can't play everything is a huge part of it.
Right.
But I think, you know, thinking about the stuff that your group likes and the people you're playing with, and, you know, I hate to use the term like keep them happy, as though like you have to keep like feeding the beast or something. And so people will keep playing with you, but, you know, notice those games that the various game groups you're playing with enjoy and try to bring them back, or bring games of a similar type. And then let people kind of say, oh, I'd like to expand to this, or somebody buys a new game, play that with them. It doesn't need to be, you know, multiple people buying it. I think that's been good for us. I know a lot of people who are buying games now, and so I don't feel like, oh, I've got to try to acquire everything, or hope that you acquire everything, or, hey, I'll let you buy that and try it, and I'll see if I like it, and then if it makes sense for me to have a copy. So some did, like Codenames. Yeah. A lot of us got Codenames because it just works in so many different places. It's good to have a copy. But, you know, not all of us need a copy of Twilight Imperium 3.
Right.
and those kind of things. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's also, I guess it's difficult to really gauge that. And I think the onus is kind of on us. Like, with the store, we definitely need to be playing a bit more to get that to you guys, so you know exactly. You know, we get this question a lot where people will come into the store and it's like, all right, I want to get a game. What would I like? And it's like, oh my goodness, like, I don't know where to begin, because I've definitely carved out, you know, my niche. So I know, like, you know, where to go for me, and I can kind of put it on someone else. Like, if they kind of started off with one thing, I can kind of branch out from that and say, like, okay, along that path, there are these other games. But It's so difficult. Like, a lot of the time people come in with a clean slate, and it's like, you know, expose me to like what I would like. And it's like, well, we need to start from something that we do know, like something that you do like, and go from there. And getting a lot of the games to the table for us, it's just kind of getting to that point where we can say, like, okay, well, you want to start, you know, you've played, you know, Monopoly, like, here's a good progression from that. Or even if it's like someone that's played Catan and they're looking at something as that next step, we can kind of jump in and say, like, you could go this direction, Or, I mean, you could, like, people can even come into the store and try to, like, meet up with some people and, you know, get involved in some sort of group. And I think that's huge as well, especially with all these, yeah, like, conventions and whatnot. Like, you can really start from there and start and, like, you know, explore some of those games and see, like, okay, where do I want to go? Like, whose opinion should I be listening to for what I would like? Whose opinion should I listen to for, like, probably what I would not like? Like, what, you know, because there are definitely, like, different reviewers out there that like certain things. And it's, sure, like, a lot of times I'll listen to someone and see what they like so I know what to stay away from. You know, even something along those lines.
Are you talking about me, Brian?
Well, it's getting there, but not quite. But, yeah, I mean, it is difficult to try to, like, to try to figure out what your collection should be. And we want you to be expanding upon your collection in a way that makes sense to you. Like, we don't want to just give you something that, you know, you're going to discard and then be out of the hobby even potentially. Like, that's the worst thing for us.
Right.
We want it to be, like, this natural progression with, like, okay, this game is what I want to be doing. Like, I played this game, I'll try this game, and then we want you to love that game. Which is also very difficult, I guess, because it's, like, the onus now is, like, on us to really give you a solid second step. And if we give you something wrong there, it's... it always worries me that, like, someone's going to take that as, like, a very negative reaction and just, like, you know, move away from the hobby. If it doesn't grab you, then it could very easily be, like, just put up on the shelf and ignored and, you know. So, I don't know. I guess... It's definitely it's a tough one, and a lot of people do come in, but I don't know. I guess playing all these games that we've been able to do, it's helping us help people that do come into the store.
Yeah. So going off of that spin, because you're obviously speaking on behalf of the store as manager. I'm not management. I don't manage anything. I'm not even in sales for the store. I help run events at the store and then do this podcast and just promote because it's my store that I play at. So I'm kind of on that line. I'm, you know, I definitely am biased towards it, but coming from a different angle. But it's almost a little rehash of what we talked about last week with why I like playing in the store. But some things I like about the store that lead to this, that help you having contentment and not feel like you need to buy everything. First off, we have that board game library and we have those groups. And so we have places you could play. There's even like an X-Wing table set up now at the store and other things like this. So there are opportunities to try before you buy, which I think is huge. Or even some people just like, hey, can I see that and open the box? I want to see what's inside, what the pieces look like, you know, whatever it is. So I love that element for the portal specifically. And I think any store should have that element. And then you just look at the people who work there. You know, there's people all across the gamut. Now, there aren't always 10 people staffed at a time. You know, typically 2 or 3, maybe 4 on a busy night or event. But you have people that play all across. The board games are covered. Miniatures games are covered. Different types of miniatures games. X-Wing, Armada, War Games. You know, you have all those different people. Magic and Force of Will. I should make sure I hit those ones. Role-playing. You have people that... across all those, so the staff is knowledgeable. Very simply, what you're saying here is we're keeping up with games, you know, and staff are keeping up with games, at least in their niche, to let you know. You know, it's not just, I don't know, those ones in that dark, dingy corner, clear the cobwebs, those are great. They're, you know, buy those. It's people with knowledge who are passionate, so at least they're telling you from their passion, you know. Yeah. And I think that's a really neat element to it, so... I love that, and that kind of helps people to find that. I think that's a key thing that I don't think the portal is just like, well, we just want you to be into every piece of the hobby and buy everything that comes in the door, you know. But if you like X-Wing, we're gonna, you know, have that X-Wing stuff for you and have those X-Wing events so you can really find that group and get attached. Or, you know, if you're looking for these types of games, we have those games and those kind of things. So I really like that element.
Well, another thing with the employees that we do have, sometimes it's also, you know, rough on them because it's like, you know, someone who's walking through a door, they come in and they want, you know, X. And the person that's on staff at the moment, you know, maybe they're not as well-versed in that. So it's like, we want people, obviously employees will pick stuff up as they're working with the store a little bit more frequently. You know, like they just kind of get this natural progression. Like they'll kind of learn stuff as they go. But even if you come in and you wanted to, like, you know, start off with magic and the person behind the counter doesn't know as much for that, you know, our hope is that we'll kind of, you know, direct you to someone who does know and who can give you that really neat progression and, you know, start you off on the right track, you know. So it's difficult at times because, you know, we want to always have, you know, an employee on staff that's got the entire array, but that's just unrealistic at this point because we are doing everything, you know, like, you know, tabletop gaming related. You know, there's no way one person is going to be able to do all that to the fullest ability. Like, maybe you can kind of have your feelers out for a lot of things, but, you know, as soon as someone's coming in and they're really wanting a life, like a hobby game, like a lifestyle game, they need to be talking a lot of the times to someone who is in that lifestyle game as well. So, and I mean, we do have like a wide array for staff members. So like there are people, you know, that we employ that have that expertise, but our hope is that even if you don't kind of cross paths the initial time, like we can kind of direct you to that person and then it will build off of there. So.
Cool. This conversation does not end here because obviously there's a lot more you could talk about with this, but I think that's where we'll kind of leave that. I think from my side, just looking as, you know, just a gamer, I would say to people, you don't have to have every game. You don't have to be involved in every piece. The one that's interesting for me is I feel like you don't have to own everything for a game.
Yeah.
But I'm different in that mindset, so that's not fair to duper people. I think it's why I like LCGs versus CCGs sometimes, and I get that element. So.
And obviously, like, we do want people to be buying the game. Like, we are a store, but we also want it to kind of progress, like, in that way, like... We want you to be buying stuff that you would enjoy. And if we do have it in the game library, you know, if you buy it from us, we hope that you bring it to your friends and you're playing outside of the store. And all of a sudden it's like, it's just expanding the hobby in general. Even if those other people don't come down, we want to promote this and keep growing it. So it is sustainable. And we are seeing like a, you know, a huge rise in this style of gaming anyway. So it's just good to kind of build on that community any way that we can. So,
awesome. So let us know what you think and what makes you content with gaming. Okay, so we're going to start a new segment here. What we love about... maybe coming off that contentment of gaming, but just kind of giving people a feel of, you know, we're going to kind of start with our niche, which is board games, and look at those, but just so people can kind of get a feel like, oh, this is why that style of game is really neat. And Brian and I are not always into the same type and the same things, or even certain things, but I think, you know, through this segment, we want to discuss different things and let you know this is why people really like this, and what we may or may not like about it. Mostly what we do like about it. That's what we're going to focus. So we started with, this week, we're going to start with what we like about Euro games. So just for people who aren't sure, a Euro game tends to be strategic. It may or may not be thematic. It's not necessarily abstract like a chess or a checkers or something. But usually it has kind of a heavier mechanical piece. You know, it's focused on that. And usually there's not a lot of randomness or luck. Player interaction may be high, may be low. It kind of depends on the game. It may not exist at all. Some of Euro games are kind of multiplayer solitaire, as they call it. But they originated from German type and European type games, and they kind of made their way across to America, as opposed to American thematic, Ameritrash, Amerithrash, whatever word you want to give to that, which tends to have a lot more luck based, a lot more rags to riches kind of thing in a game. So that's what a Euro game would be. Examples would be Agricola. I would think.
That's the one Euro game.
Agricola is the Euro game that everybody goes off of. But some other games in that vein. Terra Mystica that I've talked about.
Kanban
that we were mentioning. So yeah. These are some of the games There. I don't know why. I just
sorry, I didn't jump in to help. I was just okay. watching you crash and burn.
I was crashing and burning there. A lot thinking about. So, all right. You want to start us off with what you love about Euro games, Brian? We can just kind of go a little back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, even talking about like Article 27 earlier, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like my brain really gets the mechanisms and really wants to kind of explore the process that the designer has gone through and how they've created this, like, this engine that you're building on. So I guess that's really where I, like, it clicks kind of for me, where it's just this, I'm working with the mechanisms rather than the theme. So it's really like, I want to see how to utilize this, how to get my engine going and how to actually, you know, score points or whatnot. So I think that's just something where I'll look at a card, you know, even for like Magic or like the card game or whatever, like I'm not looking at the picture and like the flavor text. I'm looking at like, what does this do? How does this like work to my benefit? Mm-hmm. And how do I, you know, play off of that rather than like getting fully invested in like, oh, I'm playing this like vampire deck against your like Minotaur deck or something like that. That's not where I'm going at all. That's not what works for my brain. So, I don't know. How about for you, Brant?
I think when I think of Euro games, there's two main things that I enjoy most about Euro games. And so the first is multiple paths to victory. So that idea that one person could be trying to do such and such, and the other person's trying to do something arguably totally different mm-hmm. on some of my favorite style of this game. And yet we're both going to be competitive at the same time, even though our way to get there is very different. And then I think, you know, so that kind of leads to this different path and which one will work and where are we going to cross kind of on what we're doing with that in terms of how we get there and what you do, I guess. You know, when I think of something like Axis and Allies, that's not a Euro game. The goal is I need to march these figures to this capital. And yes, every game will play out different, but the goal and the path is pretty much always the same. You know, I may have to alter a little bit along the way, but that piece to get there is always kind of the same. But in a Euro game, I like when it kind of lets me do different strategies. And then I guess the other piece I like amongst that is kind of this exploration, like you were saying. Like one time I can try this, and the next time I try that. Replayability is also usually huge. I guess those kind of go hand in hand. Where it's going to be a different setup, or I can look at it from a different perspective in terms of that. So kind of those pieces. No, now that I'm thinking, the third thing to me is engine building is huge. So I always take Terra Mystica, that's my favorite Euro game, into mine. And so that definitely has that where you have different races. So every time you play, it's just a chance to play that race and explore how that race works and go about it a different way. And then that engine building of, but what if I started gaining these resources or I had this bonus that I could do? How could I almost exploit that bonus? It's kind of fun. Or it usually doesn't have quite the combos like a Magic would have. But if I can get these two upgrades working really well together, specifically against my opponents, you know, I could kind of put them kind of up against a wall, and how could I, you know, be making points or making progress off of what they're doing, or just making, you know, just more. There's just more in terms of that. So
I think also like when I'm playing a game, it's always really fun for me to kind of see, like, you know, what are people expecting from me, like, you know, and what are they going with, and how can I throw a wrench in their plans without having it as like a direct conflict,
right?
Because the direct conflict aspect, you know, you see that a lot in other style games, and I don't find myself enjoying that as much, just because it feels more destructive to like what you're doing. It feels like you can't really keep building on what you've got. And I think that really, like, you want to feel like you're doing more as the game goes on, rather than like, oh, two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah.
And I think I really do enjoy that aspect too, in this, like, you know, in this, I want to do something good for me, but I also want to try to figure out how to play the game so people aren't just kind of like, okay, this is what this person's going to do. Like, I don't want it to be deterministic, like, from the start, like, right. Where it's like, okay, it's just, like, this natural thing. Everyone's going to do whatever they need to do. Like, I don't want it to turn out like that either. And I guess even thinking through, I think the stressful nature of Euro games really is within, like, my own head, where it's like, right. I need to figure it out. Like, and, you know, like, I might be pulling my hair out as it goes along, but it's not like the spotlight's on me. It's not this anxiety for being, like, you know, in, like, a social style game. It's just really, like, I need to figure out how to actually do this within my own head, and I'm playing with all these other people that are doing the same thing, and now all of a sudden I have to figure out, like, I need to do it, but now this is blocked, and now, you know, so I need to figure out how to actually work around that and how to beat this other person to something else or whatnot. So,
yeah, I think Euro games naturally have a puzzle aspect to them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I need to solve this puzzle to do the best, and it, or very simply, sometimes it's just that competitive. I need to solve it better than other people.
Mm.
Like, we were playing Karuba, and that had this random tile draw, but since it's random for everybody, then it's, okay, how do I figure out the best path? And I'm not necessarily looking at everybody else. I'm just, you know, how can I beat them to the punch on those different things? So,
I guess the one, like, the downside to this style, like, there are definitely certain strengths or weaknesses based on, like, you know, the style of game. So, like, you know, some types might work better for my brain and some might work better for, like, yours or whatnot. So, you know, you might have a game where it's just like, I know I'm going to lose, but I still, like, hopefully you want to play it anyway.
Right.
And I think that's the way with, like, you know, a decent number of games. Like, there are some where, you know, like, I typically do well, there's some that you typically do well, and it's like, you know that going in. And, you know, if you play it enough, maybe it'll get to this, like, even level where it's kind of this back and forth. And, you know, a lot of games that I've been playing with my wife, it kind of feels like that, where it's like, okay, you've been playing this way before I ever started. So it's like, we need to get to this point where we can start doing it as, like, an even level playing field sort of thing. So, I don't know, I really do enjoy a lot of games, even though there can be that, like, you might need to play it more than you're willing to just to get to that level.
Yeah. Yeah, the king-making aspect can hurt these style games if it's not fun otherwise. For me, I'm not as good. I've discovered, I feel like I like long-term strategy, but I don't do as well as that as tactical. But a lot of Euros mix the two. It's what can I do now that will set me up to be successful later, but not purely, I'm only doing this for no benefit now, but 10 turns from now, it may be good. I don't do well with that.
Right.
But no, this is good now, and I can see the potential benefit 2 turns from now, you know?
Yeah.
So, well, that works really well for me in terms of what I'm doing there. What
yeah, and it? Like, the joke you always have is, like, you know, it's like the last round and I'm like halfway around the board beating right. me. Like, so it's like Brandt's all the way up here.
In the final round?
I'm all the way back here. And it's like, a lot of times there will be this swing where, like, I'll overtake it or something like that. You know, some games, it's pretty stagnant where it's like, dead oh, gosh,
yeah.
I don't have an end game. I'm not moving from this, and you're going to lap me, you know, multiple times or whatever.
Right.
But it's just, it's neat seeing that where it's like our brains work differently, and you can see that as the scoreboard goes along. You know, even something like Terra Mystica, it's like, you know, I'll typically be lagging behind. And it hasn't really worked out for me yet, but it's still enjoyable. Like, it's like, I know that I want to be getting to this end game. Let me see how I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other piece that I think a Euro doesn't have is it doesn't usually have that, like, memorable turn or memorable moment necessarily. It could have a memorable strategy or a memorable element, I guess, or mechanic is usually like, oh, I love that drafting mechanic, or I love that dice maneuvering, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, I loved how I could build up that engine or whatever it is, but it's usually not that moment that's memorable. And so we'll talk about, you know, thematic and Ameritrash games in the next episode, but they tend to have that, like, even if I lost horribly, remember that moment when I rolled 10 sixes on dice? Like, and that's not a payoff for everybody, but for some people, that's key. Remember that story element that, you know, really changed our brain in like a Pandemic Legacy style or whatever it is, where there's that like moment. These don't tend to have that driving story, you know, oh, the murder mystery was solved and it was, I can't believe it. They don't have those moments in them. It's not necessarily a negative. It's just one of those things that would be missing if you're into that element. You know?
I think it's a positive for me. I feel like that type of moment typically has not worked out in my favor. So it's always like, I hate this game. I don't want to play this again. Like, this is just, why do we waste our time doing this?
Yeah.
So I think it's been a positive where it's just, you know, you have a similar feel and you know what you're kind of getting into.
And some of them do have that moment. It's predictable, but it's neat. So either it's the end game trigger and then, you know, there's like X more rounds or whatever. Like we were playing Nippon, it like gets to a point where then there's three more rounds. So there's that moment of like, okay, now this is the trigger for those last turns. It's not nearly as like, but it's still a cool moment. And I've been playing Brass on the app, and Brass comes in two waves. There's like the canal phase and the rail phase. And when you switch from canal to rail, you like remove 80% of the board and start the round over with higher scoring. And that, so that moment is predictable, but it is kind of a neat moment of like, oh, now we clear everything out and we start again and things are worth more. And how did I set everything up? So again, it's a predictable moment, but it's still that moment. Let's see where the scores are at and where everything's at. So they can have that element, but all right. Rattling off some Euros. I really like Terra Mystica. That's one that's way up there for me. What are some others that I enjoy? Kalis. I really enjoy that one, especially to me, as the multiple pass of victory, which the last time we played didn't have that element as much. That's up there. Glory to Rome is kind of a Euro style. It's a card game. It's interesting because it's got a lot of elements. It definitely has more randomness than you typically see in there. But I like that one a lot. So those are my favorite Euros. You have any favorite Euros?
Yeah, I mean, Kanban is up there, I guess. Did we say Roll for the Galaxy counted as that style, or that's really
that
kind of blending
dice. That manipulation,
I don't know, that might not fit into that category, but
it's people got the engine building.
What do you guys think?
There you go.
I'm trying to think. It's tough just like rattling off stuff off the top of your head.
Madeira's another one for me that I really like.
No. That one was just very stressful. What else? There are too many. I'm crashing and burning now. So.
That's okay. So, tell us what kind of Euro games you like or what kind of games you like, and we're going to try to run the gamut here over several episodes of different types of things and what we like or what people like sometimes in general. So that's what we love about Euro. All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast episode number 17. A Jedi Craves Not These Things. What do you think, Brian?
That was a fun one to talk about. You know, heroes are enjoyable, and we got to talk about contentment in gaming.
That was good. Yeah, I agree. I'm not content because I found out, and I forgot to mention this hero, Shakespeare. I love the game Shakespeare. I found out I've been playing a rule wrong the whole time. I'm pretty earth-shaking, and I'm not content with that. I don't know how much I want to go back to the game. I played 5 of my 10 plays. Do I now play the other 5 the right way?
Well, none of those count, so you need to play 10.
You got
to
play it all over.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but Shakespeare's another hero that I like. Anyway, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, I am your host, The Brand, and with me,
your co-host, Brian.
We hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on March 30th, 2016. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.